Welcome, everybody. It is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. As always, you can join the show 844-967-2789. You know, big news day, I would say. And, you know, just a couple of things happening. Most importantly, I'm joined by a dear friend a little bit later in the show today, and the chief fiscal officer for us in the wonk business, the comptroller for the city of Milwaukee. Aicha Sawa is going to be joining us in the B or C block. We'll see how stuff goes today. But big news breaking as we came into the Maggie Dawn Show. The Devils hit it. Boy, Trump getting hit with another one. Anybody surprised that there was an effort to destroy some evidence? Not only is it the crime this time, it is also the cover-up. So, like, both things are true here. 844-967-2789. So let's do a quick recap, y'all, so that we understand what is happening. And before I forget, thank you, Anya. She just gave me a little heads up. We went on a little bit of a meta thought journey Monday through Wednesday here on the show. And I ended yesterday by walking through why Trump's impending January 6th indictment matters, what it's really about, and that's the franchise, the voting rights of Black and brown folks. And I needed to give a couple of acknowledgments in terms of content. There is an incredible writer, thinker, and soldier. His name is Michael Harriot, or Harriot, if I'm pronouncing it wrong, my apologies to the mister. He used to write on The Root, and he dropped a lot of knowledge on Mr. Aldean's song and these issues, and I used his knowledge and his research copiously, so I wanted to acknowledge that. Also, I wanted to acknowledge the journalist, Miss Attia from the Washington Post. I know I mentioned her name yesterday on the show, but I wanted to re-emphasize that to get again today, because the thought journey that I took us on yesterday wasn't a thought journey. It was a literal experience, and that woman was brave enough to share it through the Washington Post. So I want to be sure those two people, those two Black folks, get their due. That was not me. That was their work. So with that, let's do a quick recap of where we stand in Trump land criminal problems. So we've got the Manhattan criminal case. This is the payoff case. This is the payoff and lie about it case. This is the payoff, lie about it, and then falsify documents about it. This harkens back to the very nascent Trump presidency when all we were worried about is paying off Playboy bunnies, strippers, and porn stars, so that they wouldn't talk about the fact that the man cheats on his wife. That's the Manhattan criminal case. The national security documents case, which again, just moments ago, we found out that there are additional charges. That document case, the trial date is set by Judge Aileen Cannon for May 2024. We've got the January 6th insurrection case, Jack Smith. The indictment is about to drop. And the news today was that basically they had their last hurrah. Donald Trump and his lawyers had their last meeting with Jack Smith today. This is typically basically the last thing that happens before an indictment drops. It'd be interesting if Jack Smith drops the indictment tomorrow. Fridays are generally considered the days that you drop news that you want no one to pay attention to. So if Jack Smith drops it tomorrow, that's sort of interesting. If he doesn't, I get that too, because we need to pay attention to this. And last but certainly not least, and the place that I want to begin today, is the Georgia case. What happened in Georgia is quite extraordinary. Right. Not only did Donald Trump call up the Secretary of State, who's responsible for certifying the vote, and say to Brad Raffensperger, you know, just find me 11,000-odd extra votes or make some votes for Biden disappear. Yeah, that's a crime. But Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump chose to pick two civil servants who worked in Georgia's election and voting system to vilify, to make false claims about. And I mentioned this yesterday during the show, and I wasn't able to spend enough time on it because there was a meta point that I was trying to get to about what this is all about. But I think it's important that today we make an observation about what Rudy Giuliani admitted in court papers yesterday related to the 2020 election in Georgia. Two women, last names Freeman and Moss, were election workers in Georgia. And they did their jobs. They counted the votes. But first Rudy Giuliani and then Donald Trump took it upon themselves to accuse these two women, these two civil servants, of the most grievous of harms against every American. That they were stuffing ballots, that they were hiding ballots. They selectively edited a video clip to make it look like these women were pulling out like a suitcase full of ballots from out from under a table. It was all very nefariously presented. And there was nothing to see here when you watch the entire video. These women were at end of shift. They hadn't gotten through all the ballots, so they secured the ballots and they placed them under the table in a Georgia count room, which is then secured. Nothing to see here. But Rudy Giuliani took it upon himself, and then Donald Trump did, to vilify these women and falsely claim that they had effectively deposited thousands of fraudulent ballots into the Georgia election count. Here's what Giuliani said before in a hearing before the Georgia state legislature. Okay, so he was sworn. He's before the Georgia state legislature. He's seen the entire tape, but he's released a selectively edited version of that. And here's what he went on to say. They should have been questioned already at their places of work. Their homes should have been searched. They were passing around USB ports like they were vials of heroin and cocaine. Freeman is a, quote, professional vote scammer and a hustler. These two women, these civil servants doing their job, also happen to be Black women. So late Tuesday night, Giuliani, in the defamation case brought by both Ms. Freeman and Ms. Moss, facing criminal sanctions for not turning over documents that were required in that case, admitted that, quote, to avoid unnecessary expenses in litigating what he believes to be unnecessary disputes, Giuliani admitted that the statements that he made about Ms. Freeman and Ms. Moss were defamatory per se and false. Rudy Giuliani is a liar. He is soon to be a disbarred lawyer in not one but two jurisdictions. And he's a racist. Because only a liar and a racist would say these things about these two women who were just trying to do their jobs. And by so doing, undermine democracy. It is deplorable. Let me tell you what some of the consequences of these kinds of lies are. Ms. Moss had given her own her old cell phone to her son. Her son received calls voicemail messages and text messages. And they were littered with racist slurs and threats of physical violence. This is her minor son. A stranger knocked on the door at Miss Moss's grandmother's house because that was a bit of publicly available information. And she used to live there. And this stranger told her grandmother that they were making a citizen's arrest. Her grandmother called her then. Absolutely beyond apoplectic, freaked out, scared out of her mind. She had to call the police. Strangers appeared at the home of Miss Freeman repeatedly, false pizza deliveries. She received over 420 emails and 75 text messages, including things that said, "We know where you live, N-word. We are coming to get you." What if this was you? What if you just doing your job every day resulted in death threats and racial epithets? And that at the end of the day, the president of the United States invoked your name 18 times to call you a fraudster and a liar. A pastor named Stephen Lee also showed up at their house and attempted to apply pressure. There's actually police body cam footage of this. So I'm going to describe that a little bit more because I think it's really important to take these things from the theoretical and make them visceral. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm going to be joined in the C block by City of Milwaukee Comptroller Aicha Sawa. Join the conversation with us, 844-967-2789. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Go get that app. You can listen to us crystal clear. You can call. You can text with one touch. 844-967-2789. We're not on YouTube yet, apparently, but we will be soon. But you can always watch Anya and I talk to each other with all of my hand gestures and all the craziness. Woo! I love it. We're all going to jazz hands together now. You can always watch us on the Facebook live stream. That's the Maggie Dawn Show. So I was telling you a bit what happened with these two women that Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani, have slandered effectively. So not only were their cell phones and their family members harassed and subjected to violent threats and racial slurs, it got really nasty. A pastor with his collar on, a man by the name of Stephen C. Lee, showed up at Miss Freeman's house. And we know this because she eventually had to call the cops because the guy basically stalked her. And so there is police body cam footage of this. And when he first speaks with the officer, and this is in December of 20, so a little bit over a month after the 2020 elections, the cop asks him what he's doing there. And the guy had just been sitting in his car outside her house for a while. He said, "I came to offer her, quote, pro bono service. I'm a pastor. and this is quote, you can see this on the tape. I'm a pastor. I'm also with some folks who are trying to help Ruby out, okay? And also get some of the truth of what's going on. You, if you're not my priest, my pastor, what the hell are you doing outside of my house sitting there like a weirdo watching what I'm doing, telling the cops that you're here to help me? I didn't ask for your help. I don't want your help. And I sure as blankety blank don't want you sitting outside of my house acting weird. And it gets worse. District Attorney Fannie Willis has also sought testimony from another individual who led, quote, Black Voices for Trump. And this person was apparently supposed to be the one to reach out to Ms. Freeman to offer her a, quote, immunity deal. Now, this person, his name's Willie Lewis Floyd III, doesn't matter, but that's his name. He doesn't work with law enforcement. He has nothing to do with this. There's no immunity that he can offer this woman. But this pastor had this guy, oh, we need to offer her this immunity deal. So he then in turn talks to this woman named Trevian Cuddy, who has, by the way, worked as a publicist for these luminaries, Kanye West and R. Kelly. You know, the group that I want to spend a lot of time with are anti-Semites and kidnappers and sexual abusers. That's who I want to spend time with. But anyway, so the pastor asked the guy who asked the publicist to go pressure Ms. Freeman about this immunity deal. And this woman, through these chain of folks, shows up at this woman's house, and there's more body cam footage of this. Like, you can't make it up. This woman told Ms. Freeman that, quote, an armed squad of federal officers would approach her and her family within 48 hours, and that very high-profile people can make particular things happen in order to defend yourself and your family. Say what? That the decisions that she was about to make would affect her freedom, Ms. Freeman's freedom and the freedom of one or more of your family members, and would soon disrupt your freedom if Ms. Freeman declined the assistance that these people were claiming to provide her. Finally, this woman warned Ms. Freeman that she was a loose end for a party that needs to tidy up. What? I don't care if this wasn't coordinated. This was what lying liars and the damn lies that they tell do to people. They can take people's lives away from them. And that's what happened to these two women, whom Rudy Giuliani just admitted he lied about. That it was all garbage. That's the depravity that we're dealing with. How would you like it if a sitting president, the leader of the free world, decided to sic his minions on you to intimidate you and your family physically, emotionally, psychologically, every minute of the day for doing your job? Rudy Giuliani losing his law licenses and paying maybe some millions of dollars to these women for the defamation that he committed is not enough. Imagine someone taking your safety, your sense of self, and the safety of your family away from you for doing your job. We're going to be back in a minute. I'm going to talk about the sales tax votes. I'm going to bring in another expert, a friend, a former colleague, a luminary, A woman of substance, my friend Aicha Sawa, the comptroller for the city of Milwaukee. You keep it locked. If you're on the line, stay there. We'll get to you. 844-927-2789. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. 844-967-2789. Please join us. Have a conversation. So I'm going to thank all my listeners, not only for listening this week, always coming along, for the effort to pull together what are disparate seeming events in the news. But I'm also going to thank you for listening when sometimes I am overwhelmed by the moment. And today was a moment in my 9-to-5-er that I was overwhelmed by the moment. I have spoken to y'all numerous times about what I define as performative politics. And performative politics, if you haven't heard me define it before, all politics is to a degree theater, and that's okay. That's the art of the thing. But performative politics to me is when an elected official adopts a position that they know does not serve the greater good. And they do so for one of two reasons, and sometimes both together. And the first reason is to simply get their own name in the headlines. They know it's not the right thing. They know it might not work well. They know it might just be a symbol, but oh, it'll get me a headline, and so I do it. And the second thing that I define as part of performative politics is that it creates or embodies is the use or leveraging of political power for power's sake, not to achieve an aim that serves, but simply because you can. Performative politics, as I've defined it, degrades our democracy, it degrades policy, and it makes our communities worse off. And today I was overwhelmed because I saw 15 supervisors of the Milwaukee County Board take an incredibly challenging vote for many of them. And they voted for a sales tax. Now, the sales tax on $100 in Milwaukee County is 40 cents. Not $4, not 40 bucks, it's 40 cents. But nonetheless, sales tax is a tax that cannot help but to be levied on poor folks. And so that was challenging for so many of them. And I saw a number of supervisors, both on the left and the right of the spectrum, get up and speak to their personal values, but then speak to the higher ideal and what they are called to do as public servants and as elected representatives. And 15 of them acted with the utmost respect for the people that they serve today. And instead of pandering and performativeness, many of them took hard votes to save Milwaukee County parks and our transit system and senior centers and mental health systems. And I applaud and elevate each and every one of them today. But this wasn't the first vote that happened on sales tax. Just at the end of last month, 15 members of Milwaukee's Common Council had to take a similarly, and I would argue, much more challenging vote to levy a 2% sales tax in the city of Milwaukee to save the city of Milwaukee. And I'm so humbled and so privileged to be joined here today by the city of Milwaukee's chief fiscal officer, Ms. Aicha Sawa, who was elected in 2020. She's the first female who who has ever been elected to a citywide office in the city of Milwaukee. So everybody, I want you to hoot and holler. If you like Barbie, I want you to hoot and holler with me for Aicha Sawa. Welcome, Aicha Sawa, to the Maggie Dawn Show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Well, it's really excited. We sit here as a financial professional and as a legal professional, and I got to say, when I started my career, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit, there weren't a whole lot of me in the rooms that I was in. How about you? Where'd you go to school? Tell me a little bit about you, where you come from, and how you got to become comptroller of the city of Milwaukee.
Well, I started my college career in Madison. I grew up in Milwaukee, suburb of Milwaukee. I was born in the city of Milwaukee. I went to school for accounting. As a lot of people might think that's the most boring major in business.
I'm an economist, so we can have like a boring off about is it accounting or economics that are more boring?
However, accounting is the language of business. So once you know accounting, you know everything, right? So I went to Madison for accounting. Yay, go Badgers.
Go Badgers. I love it.
And my husband's a Marquette grad, so we have a rivalry every day at home. But yeah, I went, and my first job after I graduated from accounting at Madison was with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation as an auditor. So I went out and I audited, I did some municipal work. I also audited engineering firms that did work for the DOT to make sure they weren't ripping off the state.
Excellent.
I was a 23-year-old young woman, and I went into these exit conference. I said, you owe the state back $10,000.
I'm sure they loved that. And not only are you a financial professional, you're doing it within the transportation industry, which if you're not up on this, there are a few spots in the world where there just are not a lot of women walking around. Transpo is one of them. So anyways, you were telling them that they owed the money. By the way, one of the things that I love about financial professionals, and yes, I'm biased, my dad was one of them, is this. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican or you do not give a flip, what you don't want to see is waste in government. You don't want to see fraud. You don't want to see inefficiencies. And it is incredible financial professionals like Ms. Sawa that help fulfill that fiduciary promise to taxpayers. So I interrupted. I'm sorry. So you're at DOT auditing away.
Then I got picked up by Baker Tilly, the CPA firm.
Yeah.
And at this point, since I had been at the state, Baker Tilly took me into their governmental group. So then I started auditing cities, towns, school districts. So in essence, government auditing and government finance kind of became my niche. I think this happens to a lot of people in their career. Mm-hmm. You get into a certain level, a certain field, and then in there, you kind of become an expert in a certain industry within that. And sometimes
it's a subspecialty.
Right, a subspecialty. And I think it just kind of happens to people. Sometimes you control it and sometimes you don't. But I really love auditing, and that's kind of where I came from. I kind of like the whole finding the question, you know, an audit is kind of like a science project. You have a hypothesis per se, and you're going after that and looking at evidence-based, you know, you're making evidence-based findings and conclusions, right? You can't really tell somebody they're not doing something if you have no real evidence on it. You can just say, I have no evidence.
Let's just pause for a minute here. Because in the United States, and at least on this show, I say, show it or shove it. Show me evidence, show me facts. That's what we like to talk about. There are actual observable facts, and especially in government finance, there should be an absolutely auditable trail. So if the contract value was $100,000 and the deliverable was supposed to be done on X date, as taxpayers and as those that work in government, we should be able to test to see if that product was delivered on time and for the promised price. I'll keep apologizing for interrupting.
Okay.
But I always want to make sure people are understanding all of the nuance of what you're saying. Because while it may sound auditing, it's financial investigatory work. that's what it is, right? It's here's the contract. Did that happen on time? Are people taking home too many staplers? I that's a simplification, but you know, are contractors or employees stealing from you, the taxpayer? It's nothing more and nothing less that you do as an auditor. So please continue.
A teensy bit more complicated than that, but
yes,
right.
I would say.
A big part of it is assessing risk, going after the highest risk items. But yes, after I had been at Baker Tilly for like 2 years, I kind of ventured into the internal audit world and I moved back to the city of Milwaukee. At that point, I was still in Madison. And through being an internal audit in the comptroller's office, my office, I guess, I was able to kind of get a good bird's eye view of the city operations by kind of plunging in and auditing different departments, the treasurer's office, DPW, all sorts of different things. And our office also runs the fraud hotline, as Maggie was talking about. Fraud is huge. 50% of fraud is reported by employee tips or tips in general. So that is kind of how I rose, and that is kind of how I stayed in the comptroller's office. And then I was promoted and I was the audit manager. Then I went on the other side and I was in the financials, working on the city's financials. And then I was the previous comptroller's deputy, and then I had to run. That's my career in a nutshell.
She gives it short shrift. What I would really like to know about, because I'm the county's chief legal officer, right, but I didn't have to endure a campaign. I haven't ever had to run for elected office. I don't ever want to do that. But you have. And you are a first. Not only are you a woman, your family immigrated to the United States, as I understand it. Can you share with our listeners, aside from your obvious subject matter expertise, just a little bit on a personal level as a mother, as a wife, as a financial expert, what is it like to then be subjected to the political process?
I'll say this in a nutshell. I think every ounce of my being was tested while I was running, just because of how everything happened. The political landscape of 2019 and 2020 was completely different. My predecessors, all old white men, they were not tested the same way I was. And I actually even had attack ads blown against me, but it was very hard because I was also working full time still. I was working full time. I had a 1-year-old at home. I would come home at night and my feet would just throb with pain. There were other political candidates that I saw more than I saw my own husband and kid. That's kind of how you form some interesting friendships there, really long lasting friendships, actually. But it was definitely a very different landscape, and you had to just go out there and be in the community and talk to people. Most people don't know what a comptroller is. Mm-hmm. The easiest people to talk to were attorneys.
You are literally the only person who has ever said that. So I'll put that one in the credit column for us lawyers, but please continue.
It's a weird thing because people don't exactly know what the comptroller does. There are there are a good number of people that did know. And the interesting thing with that election was it was the first time that I think a lot more people understood and knew what the comptroller was, because there was a primary, there were 3 people running, and then, you know, with the general, there were 2. So people were actually paying attention. They were trying to figure out who to vote for city attorney, city comptroller. And I think in an interesting way, it made people a lot more engaged in local politics and understanding what really needs to be done.
I think that's a really key, not just observation, but part of what I hear when you speak about this, Aicha, is that not only is it complicated and taxing in different ways for women and working mothers or any working parent, But that through that painful process, which you sacrifice so much of your home life and your family life for, it helps the community engage when it's done right. It helps the community understand how government works and how it works best with competent professionals like yourself. I hope that you can stick around for a second segment with me. She's going to stay around. I'm happy to say that. We'll be back with more. If you're on the line, stay there. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you'd like to talk to the Chief Poobah, the lady in charge of the city's Fisk, her name is Aichisawa. You can join her here, 844-967-2789. If you're not nice, I'll dump you. Mark from the SAC, you're always nice. What is on your mind this afternoon? Say hi to Aicha for us.
Hi, Aicha. And I appreciate the awful auditing thing, because I spent part of my career at the DNR auditing grants to the municipalities, and sometimes you just got to go through the niggling little details, and sometimes the answer you give is not to the liking of the grantee, but that's the way it goes.
Yep.
But to Maggie's first story on the people that I can't help but think that race is a whole part of the thing where they attack those two women, because they incorporated that in some of what they said, you know, the whole accusing the whole drug thing. And my opinion is anybody who made any even casual threats to those women should be jailed, should be prosecuted and jailed, no matter how mild the threat, because it just can't be tolerated. And for Rudy Giuliani, he needs to spend some time in jail for this action.
I couldn't agree with you. With anybody, go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
Along with anybody who participated in helping him coordinate this whole thing, that a lot of people need to go to jail, and a lot of people, perhaps they need to lose their right to vote for a period of time, because they've, they certainly were involved in a plot to disenfranchise a whole lot of voters. And thank you guys for your public service. That it's a great career. I mean, that's what I spent my career doing, and in public service, various jobs at the DNR. But it is, it's a noble profession to serve the public.
It truly is, Mark. Thanks for your call. I always appreciate hearing from you. The through line here, and why I wanted to lean into the Giuliani story for a bit before we started to talk to our friend Aicha, was because these are public servants. I am a public servant. Aicha is a public servant. We show up and we do our work. We do it to the best of our capabilities. I believe that we do this work when we are the best of us, objectively. And to the standards, both ethical and substantive, of our professions. And it is a dark day when someone doing their job in good faith is pilloried, is personally attacked in the way that these two women were. And so maybe this is a good place for a pivot. As a chief fiscal officer for the city of Milwaukee, what was it like from your vantage point as the sales tax and this legislation was being debated, both on a personal and a professional level, because you live in the city and you care deeply about this place, you were born here. What does that feel like? Is there an incredible amount of pressure? I know that you issued a press release right before the vote. Can you just let our listeners know a little bit about your thought process and your experience through all that at the city?
I think, you know, the weird thing about the sales tax, as everybody has been talking about, it is regressive, right? It does hurt people who are economically disadvantaged. However, I will probably sound like the mayor too a little bit. For the first time, I mean, we have so many people coming to the city of Milwaukee. We are like the heart of the state for all the entertainment. I mean, in a 2-mile radius, you have Summerfest, you have Pfizer Forum, the convention center, like the best restaurants in the state. They're literally all in this like 3 to 4 mile radius, and people come from all over. And so for the first, and they use our services, they use our roads, and the city of Milwaukee pays for that. People don't understand that. So for the first time, people who come in and utilize all of our services, police, fire, whatever, they are contributing to that payment. And people don't understand this, but you pay like 10% tax in Chicago and most other cities across this nation. And you don't think twice when you go to those cities, you pay it.
There's been this argument made, and I've heard it on a few, you know, righty-whitey talk radio stations that, like, all of a sudden people are going to stop buying things in the city of Milwaukee. I was like, well, do you want to go to a Bucks game or not? You want to go see the Brewers or not? You want to go to the best restaurants in Wisconsin or not? You want to drive to Madison? You can go ahead and do that. That's an hour and a half away, but otherwise they're right down here in the city. Yes, there is some basket of goods that poor people will buy, including clothing, diapers, things like that, right? That sales taxes do apply to. And I would urge the state legislature to expand exemptions to the sales tax so that our most vulnerable families, those at the greatest economic disadvantage, aren't punished by these things. But I couldn't agree with you more, Aicha, that at base, what this is saying is that those who have a lot of disposable income that engage in a lot of, frankly, discretionary consumer spending finally will pick up some portion of the tab for all of these things. At the end of the day, Comptroller Sawa, are we going to be in a better place because of these sales taxes?
Yes, we are.
You heard it here, folks. It's not a hard call. My thanks to Comptroller Aicha Sawa. I admire your service. I admire you getting through a campaign as a woman, as a mom, as a wife, as a professional. You keep doing what you do as you know how to do it, and always let your best heart, mind, gut, instincts, and all your professionalism be your guide. It will always serve you right. I appreciate the work that you do. I wanted to end my week this week with a little bit of a story. Got about, I don't know, a little bit, 2 minutes left. Because they found a 2,000-year-old grave on a small island off the southwestern tip of England. They found it in 1999. They weren't sure exactly what the deal was because there was a sword and a shield and a lot of regalia. And they thought, well, this has to be a man's grave. And by working on the dental records, not the dental records, there weren't dental records. Working on the teeth, they figured out that this was a female warrior's grave. And I'd like to say this, I'd like to observe this. At both the city and the county, there have been very critical females involved in getting these sales taxes passed. And I would offer you this very humbly, that where females are elevated to leadership positions, and when people listen to women who are deeply committed to the work that they do and the people that they serve, by having us at the table, by letting us be warrior women for a cause, the outcomes are always better. So to this 2,000-year-old grave of a warrior woman buried with regalia because she was so important back in that Iron Age, to Comptroller Sawa, my thanks.